Perfect. I'm so happy to be here on the Günther podcast. Yeah. Pax Europiana, we are for peace in Europe, and we have a guest from Ave Europa, an important movement for European unification. I'm very honored to have Jan Olsen, who is also a very interesting businessman, and we will learn a lot about you this afternoon. Thanks a lot for coming to the show. And please, Jan, present yourself, present Ave. The floor is yours.
Thanks, Günther. My name is Jan Olsen. I am 58 and one of the founders of Ave Europe, a new European centrist liberal organization trying to bring together, especially the youth, on a more European pro agenda.
Wow, that's also my mission, actually. I'm very happy that we meet because that's
you should join.
What I'm, yeah, I will actually. It's the right thing for me. Ave Europa. Absolutely. Yeah. Please tell me a little bit about the background of this movement.
Well, I mean, the background of this movement is really a series of young men and women who got together about 6 to 9 months ago and looked at the political landscape across Europe and went like, what we're missing here as a counterweight to some of the radicals on both sides of the political spectrum is a centrist organization that works the same in every country, either to get political representation directly by founding a party or by influence existing politicians. In some countries, you can say a pro-European agenda is already somewhat covered. But, you know, at the same point in time, get engagement from the young ones. So in that sense, I'm an outlier. I am more involved in the, let's say, systems and IT and the other stuff behind the movement, whereat what we would call the youngsters, anybody below 50, is engaged in the political part of it.
I'm 57, so I'm your generation, but I still try to be young and to also do a lot of social media things in order to motivate the youth for NATO, for Europe, for a united Europe, for the success and victory of Ukraine and Kosovo. That's also my mission. So I'm very happy that we are connected now.
Yes, I completely agree. And obviously what we are missing here is a common defense policy, a common foreign policy, and still room for every state to be, you know, individual at social services, pensions and stuff like that. I'm sort of like strong European army, strong defense, common foreign policies, so they can't push us around. Care less about the rest of it, to be honest, because at the end of the day, I believe, you know, as long as your rights doesn't infringe on my rights to express myself, go for it.
You are for freedom. I'm for freedom. We are a good fit. And now, Jan, tell me, from which country are you from in Europe?
I'm originally Danish.
Ah, very good. Perfect. You know that I'm a big fan of your country?
Oh, yeah.
You delivered all your weapons for Ukraine. You are one of the biggest supporters and a real role model. How come you are so much for Ukraine? What's the story here behind the Danish dynamite resolve and strength to support Ukraine?
I, to some degree, I think most of us still remembers the Cold War. I served in the army during the Cold War before the wall came down. Anybody can read a map and realizes that 60% of everything Russia's import and export actually has to pass through the Danish ports. So we are extremely vulnerable from that perspective. We're not really as far away from the Balticums as people think, because you look at a map and go like, oh, it all has to pass this way. Pretty much anything that goes into Russia this side of the Ural Mountains is passing through the Danish Straits. So obviously that gives us an opportunity to say, if we have underinvested in the army for many years, and we have, I mean, I've been going on about this since 1995 when they start closing down the territorial defense, but has finally realized that we need time, because to rebuild a modern military takes probably 10 years. So quite frankly, we are donating to Ukraine, partly because it's the right course, but mostly because it keeps Putin's army locked down over there while we rearm and learn how to fight a modern war.
Absolutely. That's so important to support Ukraine. And thanks for what you're doing. You were one of the few nations who really gave a lot of things. And I really admire you. Thanks a lot for what you're doing. This is help, fast, efficient. And this is the Danish way to do things. I'm very happy about it. Tell me a bit about general Denmark, because there's one thing I'm not so happy with the Danish. You are still not in the Eurozone, and there's something with a little bit of a duck's point on the perfect landscape of Denmark, which I always try to praise. So what's going on there? Why do you like this krona? It's called, I think. You have
Yeah,
this
Corona. Well,
krona.
I mean, if you look at it from an economic perspective, it was a smart decision. Staying out meant that you have the ability to do your own interest policies and whatever. And the truth is, if you measure it on a global scale, the Danish economy is stronger even than the German ones. It's one of the absolute strongest economies in the world, which, for example, meant during the COVID crisis when lots of things were shutting down and federal bonds was going up because you know, the investors needed to park money. They ended up parking so much money in Danish government bonds, which, by the way, has never defaulted ever over a 255-year period. Not one default, neither on housing bonds nor the government bonds. But the government bonds basically ended up with a negative interest of about 1.5%, which meant you paid us money for us to hold your money and then give you less money back than you gave us with a
But
negative interest.
isn't that a little bit of free riding?
Yeah, well, I mean, again, find me somebody who is more productive than Danes.
Yes, you
and
are.
Tell me who is free riding. But yeah, no, I agree on one thing. But I think the overall principle by staying out of the euro was not just national pride. It was a simple economic calculation that says, if we are in and the cap of the deficit is not kept by everybody, then who is actually really lifting this thing? Everybody else who's not overspending. We saw it with Greece. I mean, let's be honest, Günther. Could Greece have borrowed as much money in drachma as they ended up borrowing in euros?
That's the thing with solidarity. You have to be reasonable inside the solidarity economic union. But this news, of course, is not so good because with these fingers here, I have typed about 1,000 tweets to the Danish Prime Minister to join the Eurozone. And I don't see so much support now, but maybe
I mean,
next
honestly,
year.
I'm for it.
Oh, very
In
good.
Long term, I'm for it, just
okay.
Like I'm for a common EU policy.
Perfect.
But we have to change some of the rules. Yes, it's the same thing. We can't continue to have the veto in the European
Yes.
Union, where a single state can stop everything. We also can't continue to have a monetary policy with no consequences for the ones who actually breaks them. Change both, and I think Denmark would be joining the European Union, the euro, and obviously in the European Union pretty quickly.
Okay,
Yes, it's
perfect
just
news.
The insecurity right now. We join pretty much everything else, including, you know, some of the Ukraine investment programs, which writes debt checks 10 years into the future. So I really don't see this as a big thing long term. I think everybody has realized you cannot stand alone as a small state long term. If Europe can't figure out how to be together, all we ended up being is 27 small nations being taken apart by the Russians, the Chinese, or the Americans, to be honest. Yes.
But we have this problem with some states in the European Union who are basically with the Russians, and especially the Hungarians and partly the Slovaks have been a major disappointment. How do you want to overcome such national kind of craziness?
I think we have to face a time, all of us, was that we either together or you're out. You can choose. Yes. And I think it's a very fair thing to say. You know, Orban wouldn't have lived as long as he has as a politician without two things: tons of Russian money he's getting from the gas fees and, European funds to infrastructure development in his country. Shut one down. Grow some balls, to be honest, and start running common policies. I think we are looking towards a Europe that's slightly smaller, maybe, than the one we have right now, from the existing 27. If you don't want to play ball, then leave. Why would we pay for you?
I guess the Hungarians will never want to leave. And next year, they anyhow have the chance for the elections to vote for a better alternative for Peter Magyar. Do you have also a movement in Hungary as Ave Europa? Are you a pan-European movement?
Yes. I mean, right now we already got working groups, I think, in 16 of the countries, formalization with parties in three of them. So it's moving pretty fast, pretty much on a week by week basis at this point in time. But it takes time. I mean, we're looking forward to the elections in 27, to be honest. And at the same point in time, fighting a whole bunch of other battles around misinformation and other stuff at the same
That's
point in
important.
time.
And do you
Because
plan for the 2029 parliament elections, European parliament elections? Do you plan to run as a political party similar like Volt? Or do you want just support pro-European parties like, let's say, the EPP, the Social Democrats, the Greens, the Liberals? What's your strategy on that one?
Strategy is actually to have a strategy that fits the individual country. Because the truth is, we want an organization in all 27, obviously, but the truth is also, take a look at Denmark again. Tons of pro-European parties on a sliding scale, but pretty much 95% of the parties represented in parliament today is pro-Europe. So how do you fit a pro-party in there? Probably not, yes. But that's not the same as you can't have an interest organization that pushes certain subjects very clearly. Some of the other ones, Germany and so on, has tons of room today. Nobody represents, to be honest, yes, both the youth and a liberal movement at the same point in time, which is, firm on immigration, strong on defense. So it's a little bit depending on which country we're looking at.
My friends in CDU would strongly disagree and say that they are the ones. But I see it's no longer as pro-European as it was in the past, I guess. So you're right, yeah.
Well, but who are they talking to? You and me. I mean, CDU and the others, let's be honest, they do marketing like, it's still 1982. Do you
It's
think that's
true.
going to win elections?
Ole, let me tease you on some other thing about Denmark, because you are from this beautiful country. There was this Frugal Four, and the Danish, the Austrians, I think the Dutch and somebody else, it was four, and they have somehow torpedoed the budget negotiations the last time. I think it was in 2019. And they were so adamant that we have to stay at 1% of the EU GDP that the EU has dropped all the defense-related item out of the framework in that year. And suddenly, the things have changed so dramatically. So it was probably not such a wise decision back then. What will be the Danish position in the next budget framework of the EU? Will you be ready to fund the EU more generously, or will you be frugal again?
I mean, I think we want to do two things. At least I'm only speaking for myself and Ava. I'm not speaking for the Danish government, obviously. But, frugal in the sense of saying money has to be spent on sensible things. I fully support some of the things that's coming out now with saying we need to get rid of 30, 40% of all this massive legislation that has been created for the sake of administration. I mean, let's be honest. You don't sort garbage better yourself at home than a robot will do in a centralized location 24/7. That's nonsense. Just everything in one sack out the door. You can take so many things that actually doesn't make sense, neither from your private rights and freedoms perspective, even economically, that has passed in as a rule. All of that stuff needs to go. At the same point in time, I'm a firm supporter of a common defense. And we could probably very well start off with something like the European Foreign Legion, basically a voluntary force everybody can sign up for that has one benefit, like the French one does, which is nobody cries if they are being deployed somewhere, not everybody makes it home. It's a way of projecting power quickly without having all the political bickering about what happens when the coffer comes home, yes? Because at the end of the day, they're professionals. I wouldn't
That's
mind
a
that.
big idea, actually. I heard it first time, and this podcast now with you, Jan Olsen. And if I may, I will also use and promote it to have a European Foreign Legion. That is a powerful thing, and we can learn again from the French.
Yes.
Let me
No,
ask you
I'm.
one thing
Yeah.
about the European NATO relation, because that fits to that topic. Because what I'm promoting, what is basically my big idea, is the European Union to join NATO as an ally, to next level of statehood, to be on the same level like the United States of America, the United States of Europe, the European Union, to fully join NATO. That's why I have this EU NATO cross flag everywhere on my branding. So question is, do you think that could be also an idea to promote towards 2029 together?
Yeah, actually, I do. But at the same point in time, NATO has to be reformed, yes. Right now, it's chapter five, if we agree and if we like and whatever, you can't run a defense like that. That's still, it's the same problem, fundamentally speaking, and as you have in the European Union right now. In reality, it's one person voting or veto right. Yes. If Orban doesn't want, an engagement, if Erdogan doesn't want an engagement, you're not getting one. And now we're back to the okay. So now it's the coalition of the willing again and all this other stuff. I'm pro-NATO, but I'm pro-NATO in the old-fashioned way where we 100% knew that everybody would show up when needed. I'm not willing to say that I believe right now that our big friend across the pond will show up if we really truly needed him. And I can think lots of scenarios back from the Cold War that still applies with the Russians on this side, with all kinds of versions of nuclear weapons that could be used in scenarios we're not going to like, because your enemy will never do what you expect him to.
How do you stand to nuclear weapons for the European Union in the long term?
We need them.
Very good. The French wants to be Europeanized or to build own direct nuclear deterrent?
I mean, my personal preference is very simple. We assemble some. We don't have to develop nuclear weapons. No, multiple programs were stopped at some other point in time. That's one thing. We can buy the drawings for tactical nukes from the Ukrainians tomorrow and assemble them in less than a year. It's not like we don't have plenty of cruise missiles and rocket systems that would be capable of delivering them 3,000 kilometers away. Because here's a simple reality. What Europe is lacking right now, and the French barely have it, the Brits has none, which is tactical nukes. Large strategic nuclear weapons, nobody wants to fire off anyway. So how do you get a measured response is really the biggest problem you have. How would Europe respond right now if Putin dropped a 4 kiloton tactical nuke in an empty field somewhere out of city in Denmark, and everybody goes like, oh, we don't have one of those. Are we going to drop 40 megatons on Moscow? No, we're not. And that's the problem I'm seeing right now. Strategically speaking, we need that, and we need it independent from the Americans, because there's no guarantee that we'll be able to borrow one of the ones that we currently hold if we needed it, and somebody needed diapers and everything else, yes.
Yeah, we were making so much pressure on the Americans to send their nuclear weapons back out of Europe after their victory in the Cold War. And now I think they have left a miserable 100 in Europe. And we have really the need, in my view, that we do some kind of nuclear rearmament, like in the 1980s with the Pershing 2. That was, of course, one of the keys for victory. And we probably do have to do our same Pershing 2 for Europe. Maybe Konrad Adenauer too, or something like that. Let's see
I
about
mean,
the
the
name
truth
we come,
is,
please.
yeah, the truth is, the MAD concept worked. Mutually assured destruction means we have had no war between any nuclear armed major power on a full scale since 1948. Bottom line is what kept everybody safe. We have to realize right now that the European nuclear umbrella is A, right now, partly British, if we believe that. And partly French, but controlled by the French president. The rest of us is not covered by anything, and there are zero tactical nukes. And I could think of at least 10 scenarios like the one I just mentioned, that would put every politician into the. Now you have to choose, because you don't have a measurable response. You either drop a really big weapon or what? Send 30 planes against. Yeah, there you go.
After this big issue, Jan, of nuclear deterrent, maybe let's go to the easy issue of NATO and EU enlargement. Do you support Ukraine, Albania, Kosovo, Bosnia in the EU? What's your position in Abe about enlargement of our institution towards the East and the Balkans?
I'm pro that. Again, it all depends on the individual potential member state, their current conditions, and how they have tackled all the civilian, organizations in their country, the fight against corruption, and all the others. Whether or not you have met the criteria to actually join, whether that's the European Union or NATO or whatever, I fully understand, and I have friends at the front line right now. As a matter of fact, I have friends on both sides of the front line. And I have been involved with the Ukrainian a conflict, let's put it that way, since
Let's call it war. Let's
1960.
call it war.
At
Because
this point in time,
President
yes.
Yushchenko was just in Vienna and he said if somebody says conflict, he has not understood the dimension. So it's definitely a war and
At
we
this
must
point in
win
time,
it.
yes. Yeah, and we was, there's no doubt. I'm 100% on that one. The problem is that past winning it, we also got to figure out a way to either deal with General Russia again or raise the wall like we had during the Cold War. I'm a little bit pro the last one, so just put it back up, forget what's on the other side of it. Leave it to the Chinese. There's nothing over there we actually truly need.
Maybe Jan, you have seen that I promote this idea of ex-Russia on the Facebook. Maybe that's not popular, but okay, let's see. I will not be alone to dismantle Russia, though. But one scenario could be the fall of the Russian Empire and 41 new states. Let's see for that.
Yeah, the problem is very simple, yes. Just like we saw after the Second World War. I mean, what people forget is there was Danish soldiers, British friends, and whatever in Germany until 1958. Yeah, it took 13 years after the war ended. At a point in time, we didn't have mass media and misinformation, all this other stuff, just to set that ship and Austria, for that matter, back on the right path. Yes. So this is a decade-long process we will have to go through with the Russians one or two ways. If he loses the war and there's no system change over there to anything that's worth supporting, well, then I'm 100% for the fact of saying, well, put up the wall. I actually, and that's what a lot of people misunderstand. I don't think he necessarily will lose power just because he loses the war. People tend to forget the fact that, FSB, the prisons, judges, everything else, the entire system is also his. They're just going to change the story in the news. I mean, he's been calling for war against Europe for 15 years, and other than the Russians, nobody paid attention and believed him. They've got to believe that he successfully stopped NATO at Ukraine's border if that's the news that comes. Yes, that's what 25 years of, propaganda really does. So I'm not convinced that that changes before he dies of natural causes.
Absolutely sure.
Which
Let's wish him all the worst because he killed so many of our people and so many of his people. And let me ask, do you think the kind of denazification process, which Putin always argues for Ukraine, but in reality, it's probably he is a case and his Russia is a case for denazification. Do you think it's necessary?
Well, I mean, look at their parliament. If you want to do this compare, yes, the Ukrainian parliament at the last election had approximately 2% representation from what you would call ultra-nationalist parties. The same in the Russian parliament today is 15%. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see who is the most radical Nazified of the two, to say the least. And the Ukrainian number is actually slightly smaller than the amount of votes that similar parties got in Denmark in our last election. Again, don't mean anything. There's already 2 or 3% knotheads everywhere, yes, on each side of the spectrum. So 5%, 6% of the population you can't reach. Do you denazify them? The problem is, how would you do it? How would you do it?
Now, yeah, I hope, of course, over the breakup of Russia and the individual states, then themselves wanting to change, reform, and open themselves to the free world. That is my hope. That's my strategy. That's what I call ex-Russia. But, if it will happen, we will see. But definitely, first of all, we have to win the war and kick them out of Ukraine. This is the biggest priority. And that's my motivation also for all these activities to have Ukraine win and free, including Crimea, including Donbass, and
Totally.
then integrated in NATO, EU, and the euro. That's, of course, my tool as an economist. I always say the euro is the tool of fast-track unification. That's why I'm crying a bit for Denmark. But I tease you a little bit for that. But
That's fine.
nevertheless, this is the unification tool we have seen in Kosovo and Montenegro after the wars. We have eurofied them immediately, euro adopted. And then the investments were safe, the progress was on a firm fundament, and the rest is history. And both countries are now attracting a lot of investments and are growing fast. Let's
Oh,
talk a
there's
little
no
bit
doubt.
about
This is,
economics as well, because I understand you have also a business background and technology background, because Ave Maria probably also wants to deliver prosperity towards the youth and give opportunities to the youth. So, what's your vision of a strong economic growing Europe? what measures you propose and what's your background as well. Let's talk about that one.
Yeah, no, I have a master in strategy organization and economics from Copenhagen University.
Very
good.
So
there's a sudden in the army, so my management skills probably more comes from the army than from theories and books.
Armies
I build
must
a
be
number
well
of
organized.
companies.
You build a number
well,
of companies?
yes, both for large corps. I built a series of mobile operators across Eastern Europe and in Africa and Middle East, primarily for Vodafone, AirTouch, this type of thing. I've also built a series of startups that eventually got sold off to investors, unfortunately, primarily Americans, which again tells us what part of the problem is. There is no capital market in Europe for early venture capital, to be honest, yes, not compatible to the US. Our policies on this, number one, we could start copying one thing from the Chinese, which they did to us in the 90s, which is 50% of what you sell to us must be produced here, including the supply chain for whatever that is. If not, your products are not welcome in Europe. Simple way of utilizing, the people base and the manufacturing capability that exists in Eastern Europe. Let's be honest. Part of the American problem is they outsourced everything to China. Europe's luck was that a lot of what we really did was outsource some of it to Eastern Europe. So, the metal factories, the foundries and everything else still exist. We need to protect them the same way the Chinese are protecting theirs. You want to sell cars here? Build half of them in Europe. If not, fuck off. I mean, there's no point in being nice about this thing. That's part of why we want a common European policy on industrial as well as, foreign policies and defense, because we have to start working as one block, because then the truth is we're the world's second largest economy. And everybody needs us. I mean, the Americans, especially Trump, don't seem to be very good at neither economics nor math. $150 billion worth of weapons we buy from him every year. How many do you think we buy in a decade from now? My bet is very little. Now that's,
they still have
and
very
40%
good
of every American weapon contains European parts. I mean, it's
truth.
The dumbest move you can make. Economically speaking,
we definitely have to learn from the American also some things, how to do business and how to have a common united continental union with enormous capital market, with enormous depth, because we in Europe, we missed that.
Yes. No, and just the ability to do the same thing. I know they say there's a lot of European rules that the cube company needs to be whatever. And I'm like, yeah, but making business in Europe is not very easy. There's 27 different markets with slightly different rules for a lot of things. I'm very much for, and we are very much for, consumer protections. Yes? You don't want to end up in the American scenario where you're like, 1,200 chemicals allowed in food, not allowed in Europe. I was like, yeah, there's a reason why they're not allowed. That's exactly what we should have. But we should also have an ability to, sell once one package and everything else in 27 markets. If not, we won't ever be competitive. At the same point in time, who's our friend and who's really our enemy is really the question we have to start asking ourselves. Yes, we play ourselves a lot into positions about allowing enemies to take advantage of us. I mean, the Danish government is still sponsoring technology exchange for windmills with the Chinese, despite the fact that two of their windmill companies now is the size of Vestas. And I was like, which idiot pays money for this? Why would we do this? Because they're brutally taking advantage of this to basically gain for free technology. Stare at them and saying, this is a business relationship. You want something from us? You have to give us something. If not, fuck off. The Chinese has no choice. Yes. His economy is based on manufacturing and selling to us and the Americans.
30
What
years
would
ago,
happen if
China
we stopped
was
that?
A poor development country, which we needed to help. Now it's a developed economy which is competing against us, often unfriendly, and they are supporting, of course, Russia in that war. And so we have to change our policy, and our bureaucrats are a bit slow to adopt.
Yes. No, they are totally naive, yes. I've done lots of business with Chinese companies and Chinese suppliers and everything else. And, if you don't get a Chinese triangle, as I call it, then they will try to cheat you. It's part of the culture and business of doing business with them over there. If you can establish some form of triangle relationship, this is you, this is the guy who is selling to you, and somehow somebody has something on him, so he stays with the specifications, we're fine. So we got to figure that one out. That we need a somewhat similar triangle on a permanent basis with the Americans. Let's be honest.
Absolutely. And let me ask you, Jan, because we have a very big decision upcoming in December. It's about the enforced putting of the free trade agreement with the EU and Mercosur. This is very contentious issues in some countries like France, Ireland, Austria. Oh, my native Austria is as well on the bad side here. And yeah, I guess you Danish are on the free trade and openness side, and you're always on the good side. And tell me, is it a good thing to conclude this agreement? Will you support it? And should we all be happy about trade with the Latin American countries?
Yeah, generally we as Abe, but also me personally, is for free trade. I mean, any economic theory and statistics supports the fact that over a long period of time, it's what makes everybody the richest. There's no doubt about that. Again, it is still also, to be honest, a question of making sure they don't end up in a Chinese scenario. Yes, but everything from the other side is so cheap or subsidized in that you're literally speaking destroying your own industrial base at the same point in time. We have to start thinking somewhere between a Chinese and an American, to be honest, in that sense. Yes. Putting customs on everything and making our own people pay is an idiotic way of doing it. But it's not the same as, just letting everybody in and run. And as I said, this is one of the few places we could learn something from the Chinese. That's exactly what they did to us in the 1990s when they started to becoming an attractive market. They clearly said, you must produce 50% of every car here. That's why the factories are over there now. We should say the same thing to them in reverse in all the strategic industries, pharma, transportation, energy, all this other stuff. You want to sell a Chinese windmill in Europe? 50% of that must be produced here. Why else?
So Jan, tell me something about taxation, because that's a big issue. And here in this Pax Europiana, we have low and flat taxes. But you come from Denmark and you have the highest taxes in the world, but still are the richest country in the world or somehow close to it. So tell me, what is the Abe position? Do you support flat tax, low tax, or do you want to have a lot of redistribution, high taxation, Danish welfare state system? What's your position on all these issues related tax and redistribution?
Well, our position on it is liberal market, where, and at the same point in time, that every national state gets to decide their own tax policies, their own healthcare policies within a bigger framework. Because the truth is, yes, you pay more in Denmark in tax than you do in many other European places, but the social services and the protection you get out of paying those money means that people are doing it willingly. I mean, I saw a study like 2 years ago where they actually compared not to a European state, but to the US. So the procedure that cost $100 to execute in a Danish hospital cost $380 in the US. That sort of speaks for everything. So by the time you tally it all up, the fact that you have free schooling, free university, subsidies for students, and a very good pension system, which is fully funded, there's no gap here anywhere. And people at the same point in time save extra for their pension funds. Every Dane does. But the pension fund is not really handled by the state, but by private insurance companies for investment purposes and whatever. And yes, we pay high tax, but I'm also better protected than pretty much anybody anywhere. I fall sick somewhere abroad, they'll fly me home. So,
So
and I
you
don't
think it
mind
must
that.
be appropriate, the tax level with the government services? It must be in a correlation which fits the level.
I
Okay.
mean, naturally, yes.
Well understood. Fine. Let me ask you, Ole, Jan Olsen. My question is now, how really somebody who is watching to this discussion can join Abe Europa? What's his benefit? And how can we support your noble mission, your noble cause for European unification? How can we work together? And how can we build this strong Europe you want and you believe and you work for?
Joining is in go to either our Twitter profile or Facebook. There's a sign up form right there. There's also local chapters if you go through Twitter in Italy, France, Romania, Germany, and whatever. So you can sign up both for the pan-European part of AVE, or you can sign up for the local brands. How would you benefit? Well, some said a long time ago, don't ask what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. It's about time we get back to that, just to be very honest, yes. I've seen people cry over, oh my God, I'm 18 years old and I need to spend 4 months, training for the army, and I think that's a lot. And I was like, not if you compare it to the rest of your life, not if you compare it to the benefits that army actually gives you, the fact that there is a defense and a whole bunch of other things that you take for granted. They're not for granted. Yes. And it's about time a lot of us stood up and did something about this and put it together in such a way that it becomes pan-European. Because let's be very honest, if AVE at the next election, 27 or 29, wins 5% of the votes in every country, we will be the biggest party in Europe. That's all it takes. How do we get there? We get guys like you that has an audience and everybody else to help push this message out there saying enough is enough. I am European first, and second, I'm Danish, and I'm very proud of both. If we don't start all of us saying I am European and start working together, then the rest of the world is going to take advantage of us. It's happened for so many years already. It's about time to stop that. We sit here on the cradle of civilization, to be very honest. It's about time we start acting that way. Defensively, foreign policy, industrial policies. If we want to retain the freedoms that we have right now, it has to be paid for. Part of it is the individual services that we do, and part of it is to keep our economy and everything else there free and open so we can continue to support the defense and the organizations and the schools and live in peace. And yes, even at the end of that very long speech, there is we need the army, the European Foreign Legion, we need the nuclear weapons and all the other things. That means nobody will really truly fuck with Europe if 500 million people says we just want to live in peace.
Perfect. Yeah. Jan Olsen, this was a very, very good interview. I'm very honored that you joined the show. This is AVE Europa, one of the strong new movements for a united Europe. I fully endorse this movement and please join AVE Europa. They are a young, dynamic force and they want to unify Europe. And that's what we need. We need to be more united and we need to dismantle our enemies. Let's not forget. This is important and let's win together. AVE Europa is a good new movement. Please join it and I recommend it very strongly. I want to thank you, Jan, to share your experience and for Denmark to be dynamite again and to support Ukraine. I want to especially thank you for coming, for joining, supporting Ukraine. That's most important, and for joining this show. And thanks a lot.